It's intermission time, though, right now here at the Met, and we're going to chat with a singer who you may have heard just last night. Tenor Jonas Kaufmann has been raising binoculars all over the world with his striking good looks, but once you hear his voice, you put him down and you just listen. If you were tuned into Met Opera Radio last night, you caught him as Prince Tamino in The Magic Flute. He has one more performance of that role here at the Met on Friday. It's not one of our broadcasts, unfortunately, this week, but fans here in the New York area can hear him live. So, Jonas, where are you running off to after you leave New York City?
I'm going to go to Rome and have a couple of concerts there with the Santa Cecilia Orchestra. It's a Damnation of Faust of Berlioz. And then from end of month, I have rehearsals for a new Carmen production in London.
So the ones that you're doing in Rome are concert productions?
It's concert, right, I concert see. Performances.
And how often do you get to sing in the U.S.?
Not very often. The only two places in opera I'm so far performing is the Met and Chicago Lyric, and besides that, some concerts. Like last year, I've done a season of concerts with the Cleveland Orchestra. But, generally it goes down to those two places.
How do you like doing concerts here in the U.S. and performances, operas?
Well, I like it very much because, I mean, I have to say the audience is so warm and the response is so great. So I have to say before I came here, I would never expect it to be that, that important to people because you expect a country being so big that no one takes notice on one end what happens on the other, but it is not the case, so I'm very happy.
But it is major cities, New York and Chicago, so...
Well, there are some West Coast cities as well that have interesting opera houses, but it's even more hours away from home. That's why it's always an extra step to put. So my roots are in Europe. I'm born in Germany and living in Switzerland. I have a family. So I'm trying to go back on weekends during rehearsal periods between gaps, between shows.
Well, that must be tough, though.
So, but of course not when I'm working in the States. So that's the offshore period, where when I'm in the States, I'm only reachable through internet and phone, but I just can't come back physically for a couple of days. It's just not possible.
Do you feel differences between American audiences and European audiences?
Oh, that's a tough question. Well, I have to say, when I came here last season to do my Met debut, I was pretty sure that almost nobody knew me. And though the response of the audience was so overwhelming, I mean, I couldn't talk. I was just standing there, and I was like, "That can't be true. They'd really mean me. That's just impossible." Because in Europe, it's a little bit different. I have the impression that it's not only your what you did on that one night, but also your all over celebrity or whatever that counts more. And here, I really found that the people just love voices, and they just respond as they think the performance was either good or bad. So.
Was your debut here as Alfredo in
exactly.
Traviata? So that was the first time you were singing on the Met stage. Let's get right to it. We can't avoid the fact that you cut a very handsome figure on stage. Has that ever actually worked against you, that you had trouble having people take you seriously?
Well, sometimes you maybe have the impression, but I mean, I don't think that it's really ever been whatever handicap or whatever you would like to call it. The problem is, I'm fighting very much against that cliche because I'm thinking, I always keep saying because every time I have an interview where I'm asked, it always comes up.
It always comes up.
But, I keep saying, as long as it's not the first question, it's not the most important point, it is another thing that is added to vocal qualities, to how to act on stage. If then it is another thing that you are handsome or something like that, it's fine, because you can't build on that, because that will go away pretty soon. So it's not something that is there forever. So the other qualities should count more, and then I'm completely fine, because it is important too that you have to somehow identify yourself with a person on stage. And if there is a most, you know, most operas is about love, so a love couple, and they look as if they would really fit perfectly together, even
right.
in real life, then it makes it even more credible, and it maybe touches the people more than if they're just two people standing there and you would never expect them to be together in real life.
Now, of course, you're singing Prince Tamino currently here at the Met, and you've got all this makeup on your face, so nobody sees what you look like anyway. You just look like every
true.
Other.
Exactly.
Every
I have
other
to look
tenor.
At the program to find my face.
Who's coming to sing Tamino? Tell us about where you're from.
I'm German. I'm born in Munich. And I grew up in Munich, so almost everything there. I went to school there. I studied music there. And finally, in 94, I left.
Yeah.
Well, not finally, but I mean, it's just, it was so, I didn't realize it that way, but I mean, I loved that town so much. I still love it very much. And I'm pretty sure I will come back one day to live there again. But it's really important. You can't just stick for your whole life in one place.
Yeah.
You have to see some more, and then you enjoying it even more when you come back. So then I had a first fixed contract in a smaller house in Germany, in Saarbrücken, very unknown. But it was very nice for me, very interesting. I hadn't had many good experiences out of this 2 years. And then from that on, I walked my way through all the important steps you have to do in a career. It was not one major step that I just jumped from nowhere into something very important. So I really climbed up slowly from one place to another, and hope that since it came up slowly, it will last a while and not just fall down.
Petter Jonas Kaufmann is my guest. You know, you have this very dark baritonal sort of quality to your tenor voice. And whenever I hear or see people, when you first open your mouth and start to sing, they sort of pull back and say, whoa, 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 where is that voice coming from? Tell us about how that developed in your voice.
That's very interesting, because me as a German singer, my parents, my ancestors, everybody is real German, so everybody expected me to sound like a typical German tenor. So it was very hard to fight against those already prefixed thoughts that everybody expected me to sound like. I'm always naming Peter Schreier, because he was maybe the most famous typical German tenor. I mean, I think everybody who is in this opera business knows the name Fritz Wunderlich, but he was not typical German. That's what made him so special. So, it took really many years until I discovered that this is not my real voice, and that I was only trying to imitate and trying to fulfill what people expected me to be. So
you were you changing your production to try to get that sort of German tenor sound?
Yes, I was really trying to. I was forcing my voice to sound different than it originally was put in there from whoever, and so in whoever you trust. It's just it's really really hard then to start with that, to say, well, I feel now this is my voice and I'm going to go that way. And everybody I knew, they all started saying, no, this is absolutely wrong. You're making a real mistake, and you're darkening up your voice, and it's way too early, and you shouldn't sound that like that, especially since you're so young. But they were completely wrong. I mean, I don't blame them, but it's just my voice is like that, and I have to sing always with that voice. That's the only healthy way to sing for many years in this job, and I like it very much. So it's not that I'm always complaining that I would love to have a much lighter tenor voice. That's not the point, thank God. But
but you had to follow your own belief in where
right.
You
I mean, of course,
go.
There was one teacher that discovered that, and that made me really think that I was on the right track. Because when I started with this guy, he's actually American. He's born in Brooklyn. And so he came I came to his place for the first time and I started singing, and he said, well, no, try a different variety. That's not your voice, Sir German. And I started singing like I maybe sing under the shower or, I don't know, I'm in an elevator or something like that, but never really for real, let's say. And then he said, no, that's your voice. I said, no, can't be. Everybody says it's wrong. No, it's just go ahead and see what's coming out. And I realized that I can do almost everything with that kind of voice.
But that gives you a huge range of roles. I mean, you sing Alfredo in Traviata, but you also sing Florestan in Fidelio. Now,
yes.
For people who are not regular opera listeners and you're just coming to opera, these are widely divergent roles, and you would not expect that from coming from one tenor voice. So explain yourself on this.
Well, I always say there once was a time where this was absolutely normal. Let's say 80 years ago, a tenor was singing everything that was called tenor role, and that was coming from the lightest repertory until the heaviest. It was just normal, and then people got more and more specialized in a certain Fach, they call it, in a certain part of
the
opera,
range of what you sing, or the role
and
you
it's
sing.
Just it's just been so much so strictly specialization that it's now very unusual that somebody is actually combining or bringing back together all everything again that's called tenor. So I'm singing the Mozart parts. I'm also singing Monteverdi, which is even lighter than Mozart, I would say. And this year I debuted with as Parsifal, and also as Stolzingen, Meistersinger.
Goodness.
So that's almost as far as you can go. There's only a handful of roles, like it's Siegfried and Tannhäuser and Tristan, that is more heavy than those. So.
And you don't feel it is taxing on your voice.
Not at all. I mean, it's just the mixture that makes it right for me. I would say if I would start doing this continuously, then it's definitely wrong, because you need to have... It's just like somebody who has a very stressful job in his office. He goes for golfing or whatever he does to relax, and that's what I'm doing. So I'm doing very heavy stuff, but then the next evening I'm singing some Mozart or some light Verdi, and then... My voice can relax.
So do you think that with this dark quality to your voice, you can bring new sorts of qualities to lighter tenor roles, as far as the acting goes, the personality of the character?
Yes, and also the voice. I mean, I've heard people saying here when I started with that series of Magic Flute, they said, well, that's so surprisingly that somebody with such an heroic voice is singing this part. But I keep saying, Tamino, isn't he supposed to be the hero of this show? So, I mean, why shouldn't he sound heroic? There's nothing written that a typical Mozart tenor should sound not like a real man. I don't know. It's not easy to describe. But so, of course, always in the limits. If you have a very heavy voice that is not flexible at all, and maybe you are not really good in technique, then it is not the good choice to sing something like Mozart, because you need very good technique to sing very, very, very exact, very accurate to fulfill this style of music. Because of course, I'm not talking about just screaming through the whole part, but you can add to that normal range of in that role, there are some very exposed phrases that actually, for me, really are longing for some more voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's not much. It's like maybe 10 phrases in that whole role of Tamino. But
one more performance here in New York, that's on Friday night?
Right, exactly.
But then you're coming back to the Met later in the season, right?
Exactly. I'm coming back to sing a bunch, I think it's 7 shows in March of Traviata.
Of Traviata, so we'll get to see you on stage again as Alfredo, as the great love interest of Violetta. Is there a type of role that you... We've been talking about the kind of roles that you do, but is there a type of role that you feel that you sing especially well, something you're especially drawn to?
No, honestly not, because I'm always trying. It sounds maybe a little bit weird, but I'm always trying to make that role that I'm doing or preparing or performing in that moment to be my favorite role.
And it probably happens.
It happens, because you're so much in that. And every time you come back, even when you've done some shows like this Magic Flute, I mean, I can't tell how many shows of Magic Flute I've done. It's really, really been a lot. But every time you come back to that music, you fall in love again, and you discover some new things, some new lines, which you maybe overheard all the time, and it's so beautiful. And so I think that's important, that you love the music and you love the piece you're doing, which gives some extra energy to it. So that's my strategy.
I remember watching you in the dress rehearsal for Traviata last season, and you seemed very comfortable on stage. As a matter of fact, there was one point where I think one of the lamps started to fall down on the stage.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You made a little joke with it. You seemed to be having fun. Do you feel comfortable on stage? You like being up there?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's very important that you are, because you have to relax. You can't... if you're bothered all the time by being aware of that fact that there's so many people watching you, and that you don't feel comfortable with that, I think it's really not very helpful for that job. So no, I completely forget about all the people. It's just fun. I love to perform, and so you're in that part, and you just enjoy doing it.
And you also do recitals?
I do. Yes, exactly.
How much recital work do you do, would you say?
Well, solo recitals, meaning lead repertory, mm-hmm. I would say between 5 and 10 a year.
That many?
Mm-hmm. And, well, it's not enough still. It could be more. But because I love it so much, it's the essence of musical work for me. It's the most delicate and precious way of performing, I have to confess, because it goes down only to you, and you're a pianist, and you can do everything you want, literally, because it's just between those two. And if you really have kind of a musical connection, because you're maybe coming from the same background, so you think in a very similar way in interpretation, then you can literally do everything. I mean, you can make a subito piano where it's never been before, and it just works fine if you prepare it a little bit, and the partner will understand it. It's the other way around. He plays something, a line, differently than he ever did, and you think, oh, that's a good idea, and you start playing around with that idea, and you never can do that, not in a concert with orchestra, and definitely not in an opera, because there's so many facts that are counting there. It's the staging. It's for the conductor to only hold orchestra and soloists together, which is not easy. So nobody can really take care of, except for maybe a fermata or something. Mm-hmm. Very little points in an opera where you really can do something spontaneously.
Do you mostly sing in Zurich still?
No, it's about 15 nights in Zurich,
uh-huh.
But that's sometimes it's much, sometimes it's not, because sometimes I'm in a house doing more. Well, I'm going to do here about 12, yeah, 10 to 12 shows. I don't know how many in this season, so it's almost the same.
I read that you came to love opera by being taken to the opera by your parents.
Right.
Were the productions that you saw where you were living especially appealing, or did the music get you more?
Well, it was both. I mean, I've seen many concerts as well. They have my parents had many subscriptions for concert halls for orchestras, mm-hmm. and also for solo evenings, either piano only or whatever it was, and so I and also theater. So I've seen many, many things, and so the love to music was always there, because it was obvious for my family that at home, it was all the time classical music on and on, in either radio or LPs or tapes, these old...
cassettes?
No, well, not tapes, cassettes, no. But these...
Reel-to-reel tapes, yeah.
So they all loved listening to classical music, and especially to opera. My grandfather loved the Wagnerian operas, so he kept listening to those many, many hour-long pieces. And then, of course, when I first time saw an opera on stage, it was fantastic, and I really did believe in what was going on there. It was Butterfly. And when Butterfly began committed suicide, it was just so overwhelming. I was sitting in first row, center, behind the conductor. I could almost touch the people on stage. But like 20 seconds later, Butterfly appeared before the curtain, and for the curtain call, the bowing, and I was just, it can't be. I mean, they're destroying my illusion that she is really there, because I'm that moment I've really felt that she is dead now. And then she came up and she was fine, and I was sitting there with my sister, and I said, it's impossible. I mean, why are they doing that? She should never come back again. That's just, it was so fun. And I can remember that moment so well, because I was so deeply impressed of that. And of course, I mean, this music in Butterfly is also so strong. And
do you feel that you still need to conquer the U.S. or maybe New York? You sing so much in Europe.
Yeah, it's true that most of the time I'm spent in Europe and I sing in Europe. But I think the mixture of both is very, very nice if you can reach that, because it's, unfortunately, it's not gifted to everybody, that some people have a wonderful career singing in all the big houses in Europe and never get a proper invitation to the States, or the other way around.
But is it necessary? Do you feel it's necessary?
I think yes. Especially the Met is still something very special for people in Europe. And I mean, of course it is, but I mean, I'm yet now talking not about quality, I'm just talking about the fame or whatever you would call it. So people, it really counts something when you say, well, I've sung at the Met.
Now, so you speak about you being a child and you going to the theater and the opera. You have three children?
Exactly, three children.
So do you try to encourage music in their lives as well?
Yes, of course I do. I mean, I never force them, of course, because that would be the wrong way. I mean, my daughter went to many performances. Well, not too many, so we always have to decide, and I have to see the show before or do the rehearsal period, and then decide whether it's okay for her to come in, because the lovely thing for children is that they are open to anything. Their fantasy is so wide open, right. And they don't have this shield like we adults have. When something is really, really very, very strongly emotional, that you just say, well, it's just fake, it's not real, and you protect yourself from that. They can't protect themselves.
Right.
So my daughter, I can remember very well once, I was singing Magic Flute. Yeah, it was Magic Flute, and it was the Pamina's aria when she comes, and Tamino is not allowed to talk to her,
yes. And
she thinks he doesn't love her anymore, and she is really sad, and she actually says then that's probably she should kill herself because of this, of me being so mean to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I suddenly, in the end of the aria, the Pamina walked away. I heard a very loud noise in the audience.
Oh, no.
And I just thought, oh, who was that? But it passed away. And when I came after into my dressing room, I found my daughter there, crying.
Oh, no.
And she left the audience after the aria because she was so angry with me. How could I be so bad to that girl and not talk to her, although she really loves me, she really sang so beautifully to me, and I never reacted to her. I didn't even say one thing to her, nothing. She couldn't believe it, and she was so angry. She was, I can't believe it. You're so bad. I never thought that you were so evil. And she was so much in that.
We have to wrap up because it's time to go back to the second act.
Okay.
Idomeneo, it was great having you in here. And
sure.
Thanks for coming. And I hope we get to see you again.
Sure.
This is Met Opera Radio on Sirius.